Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice, and we welcome you to the show. Today is Tuesday, January 13th, 2015, and our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. We would love to hear your comments and your questions, because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. It's a delight to be here. A wonderful opportunity, and we're just honored that everybody who chooses to join us chooses to do so. And I was, we're in St. Petersburg and Tampa, Florida area. This week we'll be doing, a full series of workshops. We'll be back there tonight at 7 o'clock and the next couple of nights through Friday, and when I was doing the workshop last night and looking at our workshop last night was Purpose, Personal Power, and Commitment, and I was looking at a schematic that we've developed on the things that we have to do to align to the truth of who we are, to align in personal power with our real human beingness. And it just struck me how deeply sort of a number of things kind of came together at one moment in looking at the schematic and how the Aramaic concepts fit into the ancient instructions for living a human life. And a quote occurred to me that comes from a fellow named Gilbert Chesterton. And Gilbert Chesterton says, "Christianity has not been tried and found wanting. It has been found difficult and not tried." And that really struck me last night as I was looking at the completion point in this schematic. And it's like, what chance do people have who are coming out of Greek translations trying to figure out what the man Yeshua said to do in order to carry out what he said was possible? You know, how do you even start when you don't have a clue as to what the instructions were? And many people will say, oh, well, you know, the Greek was an adequate translation, or an actually, the most scholars today will tell you it was Greek to start with. And the truth is, if Yeshua sat in most churches today, you'd say, that's all Greek to me. The distance between these Greek ideas, let's just take the one word for starters. And that is when they ask Yeshua, you know, what's the first law? What's the first thing we have to do? Now you'd think, hey, everybody would know what the first thing was, right? It's love your neighbor. Did you know there's no such concept in the Aramaic words of Yeshua in response to that question? No such concept. Nothing whatsoever to do with loving your neighbor. How do you try something? How do you actually engage in something when the instruction set has been destroyed by changing the meaning of the words? Vladimir Lenin says it very well. You want to destroy a culture? Change the meaning of its words. Why does changing the meaning of words destroy a culture? Because a culture is based on ideas, and ideas are expressed and transferred to others in words. And so if you remove the meaning of the words, if you change the meaning of the words, you cannot reproduce that culture. So here's a man who says, love those who hate you, do good to those who despitefully use you. He's saying, this is what's possible. And then they say, well, okay, that's cool. I really like that that's possible. How do I do it? Well, tell me. Tell me what's first. Tell me what you do. Just give me the first instruction, and I'll start there. And he says, you must have rachma for your neighbors, for the Creator. Now, the Greeks even add to that, you've got to love God, neighbor, and self. No such concept. He says you've got to have rachma for the Creator, for neighbor, in order to maintain self. In other words, this word rachma has to do with maintaining your human life. What is human life? Hold a newborn child. When you hold that newborn, you know exactly what human life is. It is this awesome, sweet presence of love. And people say, oh, I'm in love. And there's that awesome, sweet presence until the person that they're quote-unquote in love with violates a goal they have for them. And they lose the condition of rachma. Well, Micah, how can you lose the condition of rachma when you don't even know what it is? That's my point. The man didn't say to do anything that our culture teaches about love toward your neighbor or toward the Creator or toward yourself. In essence, let's look at the long form of that instruction. You are, as a human being, this awesome active presence of love. The first law or the first order of business for maintaining that is to keep a filter that we call in Aramaic rachma open in the frontal lobes of your brain. That filter means that your mind will only be able to use intentions keyed to love to form your goals, which drive your perception, which is your guidance. And that filter is the gateway in the human mind through which human life enters, that sweet presence of love that we are. So let's see who's tried that over the last 2,000 years coming out of Greek translations. You can't even start to think about it, talk about it, ruminate on it. You can't do anything with it. And so people are running around with all kinds of crazy definitions of love, as though love has got something to do with self-sacrifice or putting your head on the chopping block when your neighbor wants to hit it, or sexual athletics, or, you know, I mean, the myriad of bizarre definitions that we've got of love in this culture. It's just insane. Vladimir Lenin, you want to destroy a culture? Change the meaning of its words. I'd offer that you can't think Yeshua in English or Greek. We're doing the best we can, and I've been working at this full-time for over 30 years, this aspect of it. I've been doing this work for about 45, but doing this aspect of it for over 30 years, trying to understand how to communicate in English ideas that there are no words for in the English language, like rachma. The closest we can come, and we're still just speaking about it. When I say about, I mean kind of out there around the edges, because we don't have a concept of it. We don't have a word for it. But it's about keeping a filter active in your mind. And when that filter in the frontal lobes of the brain is active in your mind is on track for love, and the opening is there to support you living as this true human essence that you are. Starting point. How do you do that out of anything that you've ever heard come out of a Greek mouth, a Greek translation of Yeshua? All these rituals and ornaments and dogmas and doctrines and stories and insanity. I mean, in the name of people who would say they believe the words of one who says, love those who hate you, do good to those who despitefully use you, we have people who approach others and say, I come to bring you the love of my master Christ. If you won't accept it, I'll kill you. How does it get that bizarre? How does it get that insane? And I would offer it's because of the insanity in each mind that cannot accurately hear the words to begin with. Now, virtually everybody's in a conversation about how something outside of them causes a pain. Oh, I can't deal with that. I can't look at that because it is too painful for me. Well, that's all based in denial. When you think that something that's inside of you is caused by something outside of you, you lose the ability to change what's happening inside of you. So what we're here to do is to come to the highest levels of clarity possible on being able to express in English what was taught by Yeshua 2,000 years ago as the way to live our lives. And to make that understanding as available as possible on a planet-wide scale. That's why we're here on this show today. So we're delighted and honored that you've chosen to join us and to share this space with us. And our call-in number is 646-200-4169. If you have a question or a thought for us, if you call in, and you push one, that'll put a hand up in the phone queue, and Jeannie will know you want to speak, and she'll introduce you by your area code, and we'll ask your name and what part of the country you're from, and we'll have a conversation. We're just delighted and honored to have that opportunity. Jeannie, is Dr. Tim with us today?
He is, and he's on.
Hey there, good sir. How do you be?
I'm joyful and delightful, and I just finished yet another session with someone who came in rage and had a black cord of rage in their throat and chest, and they decided to leave without it.
All right.
So that was fun. You know, as I've said for years and for decades now in therapy, people say, oh, you're so fabulous, you've changed my life. And I said, no, that's what you did. And if you had any idea how many people I've shown these same things to who never came back for a session or wanted to come for 3 years and never change anything in their lives, then you'd really have an understanding about how when you feel better, it's because you've chosen differently. And
hey.
And I've been saying for a long time now that I enjoy my work because I find it enjoyable to be around when other people choose to get healthy. And I don't mistakes thinking that I am curing them or I am healing them or fixing them. And so that just happened again, and it was somebody who benefited greatly from the idea of learning about how when he holds on to a goal and it doesn't feel good, no matter how loving or positive the goal is, the most important thing to do in that moment is cancel the goal and try and find a loving thought within himself and ask to be shown the hidden part of his mind. And when he did that, he dismantled some rage that he's very clear he's been feeling. He's in his late 40s now. He's very clear he's been feeling that at least since he was 17.
Wow.
And there's always somebody else to come along and resonate that black cord of rage in him. And so applying the tool and helping him breathe through it and doing a little tapping and giving him the reality management worksheet process, and he decided to walk out of here without his black cord of rage. So that was lovely.
Well, it's interesting how many people want to onus on the support. You know, it was true 2,000 years ago with Yeshua. There was that particular case where this woman wants to touch the hem of his garment and does, and when they want to lay it on him, he says, no, it was her faith that made her whole. It was what she did. And still today, people are jumping around, repeating a name, and pretending that that name must be the key to healing, when it is the teachings that were brought by the man who utilized that name that we really need to engage and understand and go to work with. And it's certainly quite amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's resonating great delight in me to see how many different places these kinds of tools are coming from. So, you know, the Robert Smith with the Faster EFT, who sounds like a clone of or an echo of Dr. Michael Rice, and some of the...
Or vice versa.
Yeah, and some of the teachings that come out of Abraham that are just... if you just change one or two words, it's exactly the same process from what Guy Finley is describing and what Abraham is describing and Dale Ellen Hoffman and Albert LaChance have tapped into. It's all the same process. And it's just, I think it's wonderful that more and more people are hearing it and trying it and actually feeling a positive change in their lives. And I guess, you know, tonight we're going to do another support group. And, you know, I think the word ego has come up a lot in my thought the past few days, and how essential it is to, and you've talked about the acronym for ego being edging God out, and how essential it is in my own work to be vigilant about any little hint of the ego. And Way of Mastery says, in the five keys to the kingdom, the last one's humility, and it warns that, you know, the farther you go along this path, the farther you go toward feeling the love and tapping into it and realizing your true nature, the more tempting it's going to be to claim responsibility, not responsibility, ownership of it. To say, well, all this adoration people are giving me for their healing, I'll give 90% of it to God, but, you know, I really did a lot of work, and I've really been a therapist for 40 years, and so I deserve a lot of credit, too. But I'll just take a little bit of the credit. And the essence of understanding that you can't, Guy Finley says it this way, you cannot be resistant to any part of your life whatsoever and say that you love life. You must be all in. You can't take anything that's less than the love of God into the mind of God. It needs to burn off. It needs to be dropped away. So maybe you'd talk a little bit about your understanding of ego and the best way to address that kind of an issue. I know a lot of people want to fight the ego. They want to attack the ego. So maybe that's a good topic for today, because that's been on my mind a lot lately.
Well, one of the things that we talked about last night in the Purpose, Personal Power, and Commitment is the passage where Yeshua says that I have to, if I want to follow him, I have to take up my cross. And that as I take up my cross, what it is in me that prevents me from experiencing myself as the active presence of love. And that in order, he goes on to say, in order to live, you've got to die, which of course makes no sense unless you have an understanding of the ego and then the true state of being. And so this ego self is the self based in hostility or fear, that we've bought into from our genetics and resonance with different forms of hostility or fear in the world. And this literally forms a picture, an image in our mind of the self that isn't or wasn't, never has been and never will be. I can remember as a kid I had a set of records. They were 33 and a third LP records. And I used to sit and listen to this set of records over and over and over. I mean, I don't know. I might have listened to this 10,000 times. And the title of it was The Bear That Wasn't. And I'm not sure, but maybe that was part of how I learned about the self that isn't, the non-being self. And how we can function out of what appears to be a self that is a shadow, that pretends to have life but has no life at all, pretends to have knowledge but is incapable of knowledge, pretends to create but has no creatorship ability whatsoever. And it's this self that is the false self that we've come to identify with, that for me is what, when we apply forgiveness, we're dissolving. We're dissolving aspects of the self that isn't, so that aspect can be restored to its proper place, and that is as a servant. It's there to support us. It's there to carry out our wishes. It's not there to source anything for us. We're designed to tap into and be at source for what directs that aspect of self. When that aspect of self takes over, we're in big trouble. And, you know, as you said, a despicable master, but an awesome servant. And so the forgiving, the removal of all of the hostility and fear-based energetic dynamics that we hold allows all of these components of the non-being self to just be data in our minds that is there to serve us if we ask for it and have need of it, but it has no ability whatsoever to control or to run anything or to rise itself up as though it is life itself, which it isn't. And when it's active, even when it's using words that sound like they're based in love, it edges love, God, out of our lives, EGO. It edges the active presence of love out with words that sound loving but kind of have this hollow ring to them. And so the forgiving of those energetic dynamics is what allows that whole inflated non-being self to dissolve into data, useful, has a place in our lives, but its place is not to run us. That'll be kind of my take on it in a nutshell. How's that fit for you?
Well, I'd say it's spot on. We routinely have people visit the support group and they get stuck in that, the last point you were just making about there is a use for that data, that logical stuff, but it isn't in the realm of emotion, it isn't in the realm of the energy of love, it's only in this realm of what appears to be physical and how to navigate this so-called physical world that we're in. And I just keep getting more and more resonance with the idea that we hold so tightly to this false sense of permanence that we create with our ideas about ourselves and, you know, identification with things in the physical world. And the more we can step back from that perspective and realize that it's all just energy and it even if it changes form, it's not going away. And the easier it is to let go of that identification portion. In the old 12-step worksheet process that we still use occasionally, that you had a point where it said, I choose to let go of my identification with my fear and hostility-based realities. And I would tell people that this doesn't mean it instantly all goes away, but there's a huge difference between saying, I'm so angry, or I'm so sad, and breathing and staying focused in your true nature and saying, I'm here, and I'm aware of some of this energy of anger or sadness. I'm not identifying with it as my essence, as my nature, as my identity. And just that shift alone is very powerful for many people. And it was a wonderful step in the worksheet process because it helps just loosen the ties just a little bit and open me to the possibility that there is a sustaining nature in me that keeps my heart beating and my breath moving and food digesting and muscles operating to get me from one room to another that I really have no ability to comprehend at the conscious logical level, and I don't need to. But it is the essence of my core. And if I move into what Dale Ellen Hoffman has told us from the ancient Aramaic, that faith means acting from the rooted center of my being, I can have faith in that true nature and act from that true nature. And then things are just very different. The world looks differently to me. It responds differently to me. And that's got nothing to do with my sense of myself as this identity I've created for the past 60 years on the planet and memories of relationships I've had and successes and failures and degrees and money and things I've accumulated. It has to do with that energy of creation that wants to express through me. It has to do with my willingness to use this physical body as it appears a physical body as a communication device. And if I choose to communicate that loving true essence, my world starts to reflect it back to me. And if I choose to communicate something else, the world will reflect that back to me. But it's not about the identification with the ego. It's about understanding something far greater than me allowed me to have this presence here. And they did a white stone ceremony at the Unity Church I attend a couple weeks ago, and I was doing a little meditation in the middle of the service, and it came to me that my three stones, not one, but my three stones should read, joyfully blessing creation.
Mm.
And that's my morning mantra. You know, from Way of Mastery, it says this body is a communication device, and that's a temporary communication device, and just use it to communicate what you want more of. So?
Well, more love, you just communicate more love.
There you have it.
You mean like as in giving and receiving are the same thing? Wow,
yeah,
that's a radical concept.
As in, I want to be on the more love boat.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Awesome. Well, speaking of a love boat, Jeannie and I are actually getting our plans together. We've got the rest of the week of workshops here at Unity North in Tampa. So we'll be there each night this week from 7 to 9:30 at Unity North, doing a free series of workshops. And then Saturday we'll do Truth and Still Point Breathing. And then on Sunday we'll start, actually the next day we'll start, and we'll do another 7 days. We'll have done 14 days straight. And then the next morning we're going to get in the van and we're going to pack up and head down to Miami. park, and Monday get on a cruise ship for 10 days and get some writing done. Jeannie's got a commitment to get her new book organized, and I've got a commitment to complete Chapter 24 of the new Why Is This Happening to Me Again, consistent with the new worksheet. So we've got our plate full there, and we're going to get a little playtime in, and we're going to let them feed us. And we found a really excellent deal on a cruise, and then when we had actually originally ordered an inside cabin, we just got our tickets and they upgraded us for free to a balcony. So we'll have an outside balcony. So that's going to be pretty cool. It ought to be a really nice time, and we're going to get some good writing and some good work done. So things are rocking along, and so we invite everybody who's in Tampa. Unity North in Tampa, you can jump on our website, whyagain.org, and grab the schedule, take a look at what we're doing. Tonight is Introduction to Advanced Understanding of A Course in Miracles, going to synthesize about 70 different lessons from the course. And then tomorrow night is, I believe it's Laws of Living. Friday night we're doing Getting the Stress.
Tomorrow night, Circle of Life and How to Play It. And then Thursday
then
is Laws of Living.
Right. And then Friday is Getting the Stress You Need. Saturday, Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing. Then we'll start Sunday morning at Unity, First Unity in St. Petersburg. And then we get back from that cruise. Dr. Tim, thank you, will be doing the show for us while we're gone that 10 days. And then the next week we're back, and we'll be at, we'll be in Miami at the
Universal Truth.
Yeah, so we'll be doing that, and then up into Fort Lauderdale and Pompano. Jeannie will be doing her Healing the Whole Woman retreat. Do you want to talk about that, Jeannie? What dates that's happening?
That is going to be on March the 13th and 14th. It's actually the annual women's retreat that Unity of Pompano sponsors, and it's at the Duncan Center in Delray. And it starts about 4:30 on Friday night and goes to about 7 o'clock on Saturday. And so I'll be the facilitator for that and have three different sessions in there. So I'll get to teach for about 9 hours during that 2 days. And we
do
have two callers.
You'll get to teach for 9 hours unless the same thing happens on the as happened in the last one that you did when there was an intermission. Everybody said, no, don't stop. We don't want an intermission. Keep teaching. So it wouldn't surprise me if you do 12 hours instead of 9, but it'll be fun to see how it unfolds. Let's listen to our call. Let's say hello.
Okay. The first one's area code 910. You're on the air.
910. Welcome to the show. Give us a name. Where are you calling from?
A mute challenge. Sorry about that. It's Susan in North Carolina. Is it me that's on the air?
You got it. Hey there, young lady. Welcome.
I know. I'm calling every day. Now you want me to stop, don't you?
No.
I'm
keep
laughing.
Going. Every day. Every day. We delight
thank
in hearing
you.
From you.
Thank you.
You
thank
might
you,
look
thank
at
you,
the thought. You.
You
might want to look at the thought and do a worksheet behind whatever it was that would say, now you want me to stop. That looks like might be a little forgiveness work there.
That is the thing that's on my plate right now, Michael. In every, I was just thinking today as I was working, how many times I'm thinking I'm not doing it right, you know, that there's something wrong with the way I'm doing it, not doing it perfectly. And anyway, and how many times that's showing up in the mirror, the projection that I'm hallucinating. Anyway, what I really want to talk about again is the love of truth. Are you willing to go there with me one more time?
Of course.
Okay.
So are you willing to love the truth? Are you willing to love the truth that you're right? You're not doing it perfectly. You're not doing it right. And what you're doing is awesome.
Thank you. I'll breathe it through
that
one.
I've been doing this for 45 years. I've been doing it for 45 years, and I'm still not doing it perfectly. Every day I learn from being with the Aramaic Yeshua and Ruka, another little piece that I was off base on, and I come to understand another piece of it. It's not about doing it right. It's about you standing in the space that you are and the awesome work that you're doing and the awesome gift that you give to people when you do your work, and then when you gather people and open your mouth and teach. That's what it's about, and it's awesome. We watched.
Thank you.
When we
Thank
were there.
You. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that acknowledgement. And the part that I'm thinking yesterday as I was talking about the love of truth and the nine-bit mind. And when we have a low love of truth, when we do the evaluation, and I was explaining it to a friend of mine yesterday that was thinking about taking the laws of living, and we were looking at the evaluations, and they were asking more extensive questions on the love of truth, the love of self, and the love of others. And my, you know,
right.
I can tell you what my love of truth is down, and my love of others is 100%. My love of self
right.
is down a little bit lower than that, so than others, too much, but a little bit. Anyway, the question is, gullibility is there because I only see nine bits, and the nine bits that I'm seeing, according to that, is a lie. It's not the truth about others. So, but if I only have nine bits that I can see at any moment, how am I ever going to see the truth?
Well, you know, that's kind of like the ultimate defeatist attitude. Oh, well, it's not possible, so I might as well forget it. No. What Yeshua taught us is that if I have Rachma active in my mind, then my mind is the highest and best servant it can possibly be. And as I strive to balance, when we do the evaluation, for those who don't know what we're talking about, we do a personal code evaluation at the beginning of each intensive, and it gives people feedback for when there is a blockage in the mind, how to spot that blockage, and then what to do to correct it. And there are 10 different scales, and 3 of the scales are love of self, love of others, and love of truth. When those particular scales are out of balance, the mind tends to be out of balance. So if I have a really high love of others and a high love of self but a low love of truth, then what's going to tend to happen is there's going to be information I'm not going to see about others that would be useful for me to see. But that doesn't mean I can't see any truth about them. That doesn't mean that everything I'm doing is off base and in error. It just means that I'm not getting as complete a data coming into my perception as I could otherwise have. And so if I keep moving forward with that, you know, moving in the direction of keeping Rachma present, spending time each day standing in and connecting to the presence of love and having that presence of love bring my mind into a healed state, then I'm getting the information that I need at this point, and I can improve. It's like, you know, it's an instrument. If you imagine that we have, let's say that you go to the New York Philharmonic. Now, I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me if in their acoustics, from the setup of the room to the fabrics in the room to the sound system, that probably the New York Philharmonic has probably got $5 million in sound, in making the sound right. So when the Philharmonic comes out and plays Bach with that $5 million sound system, you are listening to Bach. And imagine that they're recording the concert and broadcasting it. And I'm on the other side of town, and the broadcast signal is coming out with this $5 million sound, and I have a $10 transistor radio. I am listening to Bach. But it's not quite the same Bach as it would be if I were sitting in the audience in front of the New York Philharmonic with that $5 million worth of equipment and sound acoustical, you know, perfection. So each of us has an instrument, and, you know, my instrument can be $10 transistor radio, and that would be the person that lives in rage and guilt and fear, and everything they look at is the pits, and there's something wrong with it and something to complain about, and they whine and they whine and they whine and they talk about how it's all somebody else's fault that I'm feeling this, and if only you hadn't said that, and you shouldn't make me do this, and you shouldn't tell me to do that, and blah, 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 and on and on and on they go. You know, that instrument is kind of like a $10 transistor radio. If I start out doing my work and I'm oblivious, I'm unconscious, I live the life of the culture, rage and guilt and grief and infidelity and, you know, all the stuff that goes along with this culture is my norm, then it's like my body-mind unit, my instrument's like a $10 transistor radio. As I start to upgrade, as I start to forgive the rage, the guilt, the fear, the sadness, the hatred, the self-hatred, the vengeance, the lack of love of truth, then I begin to upgrade the device. And as I upgrade my device, ultimately, I'll get to hear the $5 million sound quality in that space where the New York Philharmonic plays. And so be careful of the tendency to put self and capability and ability down. It's an old dynamic sadly taught by many of the religions. Just really bizarre and insane in the name of Yeshua, we've been taught to self-destruct. And so if I'm in that low love of truth or things I don't want to look at, then I'm going to work, and you know, we talked yesterday about some of the tools for achieving that, I'm going to work with strengthening my love of truth so that my instrument is more accurate in portraying what's coming through the sound system, coming over the broadcast waves. And as I upgrade the instrument to its divine perfection, it's like sitting in the room with the Philharmonic. Does that fit and make sense to your question?
Absolutely, that does. That helps a lot, Michael. I had you on speaker. The question, I thought you would give me the answer. I expected you to tell me how the 9-bit mind was going to see the truth. That was my thought when I called. I was hoping and knowing that if I'm connected to love, I'm going to make the highest and best decisions from my highest intelligence, and that's what I teach. So, and I'm getting ready to make some big decisions in my life, and I just wanted to make sure that if I'm in blockage of truth, of course, I'm getting ready to take the evaluation too as my class takes it. So I'm looking forward to that, and I'm doing worksheets every day, almost, you know, a lot of worksheets. So if I see something that's less than love, I am looking at it, and I notice that everything, if I'm not seeing love, is the outpicturing of my mind. It's
yes.
My hallucination, and it's for me to clean up. It's my responsibility, and I'm totally willing to do that. I just had that question about love of truth, because we've had that on the plate here in Wilmington, talking about it quite a bit here lately. So I was trying to get better clear, or getting clearer and clearer. But I just want to make sure if I'm making decisions that I'm making them from my highest intelligence, even with the low love of truth, if I'm connected to love, I'm going to have the highest intelligence. Is that right on?
Yeah, when you're connected with love, that's where it's going to come from. And what's going to happen is you're going to stop making decisions. You're going to move out of the decision-making area. And decision is the automatic resonance in brain cells according to content. So a situation presents itself. And let's say it's a relationship challenge. And out of my highest guidance, you know, the workshop we did last night was purpose, personal power, and commitment. And we define in this work personal power as the ability to be continuously aware of and function out of your highest guidance. So your highest guidance in every situation and relationship is to function lovingly. And then a challenge comes in a relationship, and carbon-based memory holds a decision that, oh, if something like this happens, rage is the best way to heal it. Then the mind through resonance makes a decision to go into rage. If I were choosing, I would replace that decision with the choice to stay connected to and committed to love. And this is, you know, the battle of David and Goliath. This is the battle of Armageddon. So Goliath is the non-being self with 1,000 generations of decisions. And a decision is just pure resonance. If I say don't think about the color of your car, you don't choose blue. Brain cells fire and blue comes up. That's a decision. Choice is when I bring a new piece of information in through my spiritual faculties from being and introduce it to my mind and say, excuse me, Goliath, this is what we're doing. So my guidance has been to function lovingly in relationship. This challenge is presented. Goliath, through resonance, a decision, an automatic decision comes forward. And this carbon-based memory system is a decision-making machine. This decision comes forward and says, ah, what we do in our family system when this sort of challenge happens in relationships is we go into rage and fight and we protect ourselves and leave. And if I'm strengthened enough in being, I will forgive that decision and I'll follow my choice, my highest guidance. Excuse me, Goliath, we're not doing rage here. This is a person in front of me that I cherish. I cherish the fact that they're going to be in my life for eternity. I choose to treat them lovingly, gently, and with respect. And Goliath says, no, don't you know you'll get hurt? Don't you know that somebody will leave you? Don't you know that? And blah, 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 blah. And all the rationalizations that Goliath has, the carbon-based memory that's held in the past in the genes of relationships breaking and hurting and losing and death and, you know, abandonment and all those things are all the things that have to come up for healing. And as I have personal power, I stay connected to and aware of my highest guidance, and I actually function out of that. That's choice.
Wow.
So Goliath's got is a decision-making machine, got a decision for everything. And it's just like a calculator. It depends how all the little clicks fall into place, what decision is going to come forward. You know, if you've ever been in a situation where that sort of thing has happened, you've gone along and the decision has been, oh, yes, 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 let's go for it. Yes, 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 yes. And then the person in front of you says or puts out one sentence, and it's the wrong sentence. And when that sentence enters into Goliath's calculator, the decision all of a sudden is repulsion. I don't want anything to do with this. Whereas just a moment ago, the decision was, yay, let's go for it. And most people who live in that kind of fickle world have no idea what's controlling their lives. And it's the decision-making machine called the non-being mind. As I strengthen my spiritual being, as I develop a viable conscious spiritual body with choice, when Goliath comes up with, oh, no, we're going to escape this because this could be dangerous, I say, excuse me, I'm committed to being loving, gentle, and respectful. And part of my commitment is I made the commitment to be here for and with this person, so I'm going to be here with and for them, no matter how much you want to run away. And by the way, here, let me see, what's the goal that brings that up for us? Now I'm going to cancel that goal. I'm going to go in and I'm going to remove that decision from my carbon-based memory, and now I'm going to be freed of the influences of the past in that regard. Did that follow logically and make sense?
It does. It's very interesting that what you said. It's very, very interesting. I had no idea. Oh, my goodness, I got somebody at the door. I'm on the phone. I'll just hang on just 1 second.
Go for it. So while we're hanging on, just this idea of decision happens by resonance. If I say don't think about the color of your car again, what that does is it resonates content, and the content is simply intensified in its rate of vibration and comes up as bang, this is the answer. Decision. Choice is a subtle spiritual faculty that comes in and takes charge of the decisions of the mind and discerns between them, throws out the ones that do not fit with my highest guidance, and I now am able to follow through with choice, introducing something new to my mind and functioning out of that which is new that maybe has never been seen in my bloodline, has never been seen in my generations. Whole different game. Whole different game. A conscious life happens rather than a replicate life that Julie was talking about yesterday. Are we back?
Yes, Michael. Thank you so much for holding.
That's
great. Everything you said was perfect, and it was aligned. I was more or less talking about the decision to stay in my house, buy my house, or move. So that was the decision I was thinking about. But you're right. If I'm connected to love, I'll come from choice instead of the automatic decision maker.
Right. And the result might be exactly the same. But making choices will always keep you in harmony with your highest and best. The same thing coming from decisions can get you in trouble.
Right. It's amazing. And yes.
I just wanted to throw in two things that struck me right away when you first asked this question. And the first one was how Michael frequently talks about trying to figure it out and reason it out as one of the pseudo-solutions of the non-being mind. So how could it be, how will I ever discover truth if I'm only seeing 9 bits? So that was the first thing, cancel the goal to figure that out. And the second thing that came to me was, did you ever play the hot-cold game when you were a kid? Somebody would hide something, and then they'd bring you into the room or the house, and they would know where it is, and you wouldn't. And whenever you moved in the direction that would bring you closer to it, they would say, you're getting warm, you're getting warm. Do you ever play that game?
I love that game. That's great, yes.
Okay. Well, that's what the Creator set up for us. The Creator loves that game. And so every time you feel loving, you're getting warmer, you're getting warmer, you're getting warmer. And you feel really loving and it's strong and it can't be knocked off, then you're red hot or you're white hot. So those two things came to me. I just had to share.
Oh, when you're hot, you're hot, right? When you're hot, you're hot. When you're not, you're not.
So you've got that Geiger counter right built in, and when you're feeling loving, you're right on track. And when you're not, you know, it's just a little feedback mechanism telling it go in the other direction.
Fantastic. Thank you. Thank you. Thank both of you. Thank you all. Thank you, Jeannie. And I'm going to sign off, and maybe you'll have another caller. Thank you so much for helping me today.
All right. Have a blessed day.
Awesome. And we do have
Jeannie,
another caller.
Okay.
It's also an area code 910. You're on the air.
Yes. This is Patsy from Wilmington. And
lady, welcome.
Thank you. The first thing that I certainly wanted to say is that Susan, you were correct. She is an awesome teacher. And those of us who went through her Laws of Living class have been shaped in new ways, and that is wonderful. And we're all still working very hard. So I had a question about the framing of goals worksheet that I work on, among other things.
Yes.
And what I have been doing is that I have been taking, for years I've had my to-do list for the next day. And so what I've tried to do now is the things that I have to on my to-do list, I'm changing and say what do I love about this the night before, and then I think I'm been stating it as having already done it and having already achieved that. Does
right.
that make? Am I on the right track there?
Yes, the whole idea of framing a goal, if you remember that line in the worksheet that says, see the end from the beginning. When you're framing it, you want to frame it as though it is already complete, and you can see, feel, hear, smell, taste, touch its completion. And then frame the goal from there. And for those who are new to the show, it's the worksheet. You can go on the website. It's called Mind Goal Management. And what it does is that at the end of the day, you cancel all goals from your mind because goals create stress, and you want to sleep stress-free. And you frame your goals for tomorrow. That is, you lay out what it is that tomorrow might look like, and you simply ask for feedback on those goals while you sleep, and you don't set them until the next morning. And then the next morning when you set them is when you create the stress and go for it. And the idea, you know, the difference between using that worksheet and having a to-do list is that the tendency in our culture is to set goals, set goals, set goals, set goals, which is just one aspect of the whole process of developing will. And so let's imagine we have a person who we're going to take them into the gym, and we put them on the leg machine. And for years they work out, and they develop and they build their legs, but they never develop any other part of their body. So here we've got this set of legs that are, you know, they're like a tree trunk, powerful, strong, you know, and a little scrawny upper torso and arms that can't lift anything because they haven't been developed wholly. The idea of the mind goal management sheet, and that's what basically a to-do list does. It develops one aspect of will, whereas there are several things that will can do, and that includes the framing of the goal, the setting of the goal, the canceling of the goal, and as you do all of those things, you develop that faculty wholly. So, you know, with our comparison to the gym, as I'm developing my leg muscles, I'm developing my torso, I'm getting my six-pack going, I'm developing my arms, my neck, and so I have a balanced body that is strong in a whole way. And in the same way, as you utilize that mind goal management sheet, it exercises all the things that will can do, and I have a strongly developed whole faculty of will rather than just one aspect of setting goals and then getting so stressed that I can't live with myself.
And that's very helpful. And so if I have, I think some of my goals may seem like my to-do list, you know, like that's not very something way out there in the world that's going to do great things. But for instance, if I on my to-do list was to pick up my grandchildren from school, if I look at that as I've achieved my goals already, I might have said, would this be helpful? It brought me great joy to pick up my grandchildren and listen to them banter.
Exactly. I might, if I'm a visual person, and we're down to the last few seconds, so we're going to have to close the show, but in terms of framing that, I might just see myself in the car with the kids, and we're laughing and we're playing. We're just having a great time. We're traveling through the city safely and getting to our destination, having dinner, and just awesome. So that would be the visual that you would put into the framing of that goal, seeing the end from the beginning. So that's right on track. And unfortunately, our time is out. And if we'd like to talk more about the Mind Goal Management Sheet, we could do that tomorrow on the show. We could call in early if you'd like, and it's awesome. Patsy, thank you for your call. We appreciate you, and we appreciate everybody who chooses to join us, and we hold the space that everyone creates an awesome gift for the world. Have the best year yet of your eternal life, and bring us drinks to the show tomorrow. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.